Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to Don't Stop Us Now with Greta Thomas
and Claire Hatton. And you're in the right place if you're after inspiration, uplifting stories and practical advice from innovative and pioneering women around the globe.
We generally release a new episode every second week. And the best way to stay in the loop with us is to subscribe to our podcast on whichever streaming platform you use.
And if you're enjoying the show, help us get the word out to even more people by rating and reviewing us. We thank you so much in advance.
Indeed we do. And now to this week's episode.
Hello and welcome back to Don't Stop Us Now, your one-stop shop for navigating your career, be that as an employee or an entrepreneur.
Yes, indeedy. And today's show is one of our regular how-to episodes where we focus on a common career challenge. Today's topic, managing up, is particularly obviously for those of you who have a boss or maybe more than one boss. And who hasn't had a few of those in their time?
Exactly. It's most people, I think.
Yeah.
I'm sure many of us have been there. You know, that feeling of, well, how do I put it delicately?
Probably can't.
Frustration with a manager who just doesn't seem to get it.
Mm.
Maybe they're a little hands off and leave you floundering for direction. Or maybe they're the complete opposite, a micromanaging hawk that swoops down on every tiny detail.
Oh boy, I have certainly been in that situation and it was so frustrating and so stressful. But we will come to that later.
Because we will.
Today we're going to share some key ways that you can navigate a couple of different tricky situations that you might find yourself in with your boss. One of them is a pretty universal one, actually. How to effectively influence your manager. We'll share strategies on how to effectively communicate your ideas and get buy-in for your projects or your budget requests, even if your boss seems initially resistant. We'll explore how do you get the credit you deserve. You know, it's awful if you are not getting your contributions noticed. So we'll provide some really actionable tips on ensuring you get the recognition.
And finally, being micromanaged. If you're feeling like you're constantly being watched over your shoulder, then keep listening, as we'll share ways to address micromanagement in a professional and respectful way.
So come with us now on this journey of managing up. And a big shout out to the great group of women we worked with in Bangkok a few weeks ago. It was their questions to us that prompted us to make this episode. You know who you are.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much. So before we dive into our specific scenario areas, we want to start by stressing that being effective managing up isn't about manipulation. It's about fostering a collaborative and productive working relationship. It's about building two-way trust and respect over time.
Couldn't agree more, Claire. You know, that's such an important point to make because it's that mutual trust and respect. It's what makes any professional relationship or any relationship, in fact, work well. And even with that framing and speaking from experience, I know I could have handled so many occasions better if I had thought about it more, including some of the things we're going to share right now. So let's dive in.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's get specific and explore how to more effectively influence your manager or indeed other key stakeholders.
Exactly.
So the first thing is to be an observer and tailor your communications. You need to tailor your communications to your manager's style. And in order to do that, you really need to observe your manager and reflect on their communication preferences. You know, do they like concise emails or detailed presentations, for example? Do they need data? Or are they more taken with more creative approaches, you know, like visuals?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're not sure, or if you've fairly recently joined an organization or got a new manager, then you should ask them what works best for them in terms of communication so that you don't even have to second guess it.
Yeah, exactly. So once you're clear on what style and format they prefer, then of course you need to tailor your approach to suit their style as much as possible.
Yeah.
For example, keep it brief if they prefer brevity, you know, particularly those action orientated people, they want you to just tell it how it is, really direct, keep it brief.
Yeah.
Or figure out what visuals you can use if they've got a more visual approach.
Yeah.
Or, you know, some people really like you to talk about what they've done in their weekend first, build relationships. You know, it's really important to think about their communication approach.
Yeah. And sometimes, again, if you're not clear what their approach is, maybe there's someone you trust that seems to have a great working relationship with that person and you can get their advice. But the other thing is, you know, and don't be just restricted to thinking about the types of style of communication. It's also when and where. And so, you know, it might be that it's better to have a walking meeting with your manager to successfully persuade them, for example. Or it might be that you know they're not a morning person and you want to meet with them in the afternoon. So it's really important to think about that aspect as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and it's surprising, isn't it? We all know this stuff, but we don't actually really think about it enough.
Well, that's right. In the pressure of the moment of, especially if there's time sensitivity, of you needing to get something approved or across the line, you can just sort of dive in without going through this kind of crucial pre-work, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, the second strategy to more successfully influence your managers and others is to frame your idea, and it's not instead of, it's as well as getting the communication style right, is to frame your idea or your recommendation within the context of both the organization's goals and ideally your manager's individual goals or KPIs. And needless to say, you've got to try and highlight the benefits of your recommendation within this same bigger context than just it's good for you or your team.
Yeah, exactly. You know, an example might be, let's say you're really taken with all the stuff on AI, just like we are.
Yep, absolutely.
And one of your professional development goals is to learn about how to use AI tools, but it might not be a key part of your role. So instead of going to your boss and asking to spend some time learning AI tools, position it in the context of an important goal and metric for your manager or the organization. So, you know, you could say, you know, that you really want to learn more about how AI tools can expedite our progress with increasing customer satisfaction scores, for example.
Yeah, if that's relevant to you and your boss's KPIs.
That's it. So as well as framing your recommendation within the bigger picture, remember to be bringing solutions, not problems, to the table. So if your recommendation is, let's say, not to proceed with a project or initiative your manager's considering, what's your rationale and what's the alternative?
Yeah, that's such a good point. To add to that, just as you need to bring solutions to the table when you're trying to influence, you also need to demonstrate to your manager or whomever it is that you've anticipated the potential roadblocks or potential issues or risks and show that you have thought through how to address them if they should occur. And of course, you do need to be not a steamroller when you're sort of selling and influencing. You need to be open to feedback as well, because your manager might have valuable insights or suggestions that could improve on your idea. So remember to approach the conversation with an open mind and that willingness both to listen and to collaborate with them to get this thing through.
Yeah, totally. Well, there's three strategies to help you influence. Study the preferences and motivations of those you want to influence and tailor your communications. Frame your idea or recommendation within the bigger picture of your manager's and or the organization's broader goals. And finally, bring solutions and show you have anticipated issues and risks.
Fantastic. Well, from influencing to turning our minds now to getting appropriate credit for the work you do. Now, this can be quite an emotional topic, can't it, Claire?
Yeah, it can be. I think of it in two ways. The hopefully much less common, which is credit theft.
Yeah.
Where someone else claims to have done the work you actually have done. And the way more common is credit silence, where simply no one knows or appreciates what you and your team have done because you actually haven't told them yet.
Yeah, I really like those categorizations. And I think so many of us just expect that if we put our heads down and do our job and tick off all the things we're going to do, that we'll get the credit for it. And it isn't necessarily the case at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that leads us to our first key imperative in getting the appropriate recognition for all your hard work. And that's you have to proactively communicate what you've achieved. Even if it's in your job description, you need to be proactive. So for example, if this is a project you're leading, then you want to regularly communicate project updates and milestones achieved to your manager or the relevant stakeholders, particularly when you share with broader stakeholders or executives. You know, that really helps make sure that people other than your immediate team, if you like, and your immediate manager know about the contribution that you're making or leading with your team. You know, and don't think about it as you having to sort of be overtly bragging about a certain milestone achieved. Think about it as you being excited to share the progress that is being made on Project X or Project Y. And then if you think about it in that way, I think it takes away some of that discomfort and squirminess you can feel that you might be bragging if you're sort of talking about those achievements.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's a really, really good suggestion. The other thing I remind my coachees to do is that, you know, just think about it like this. Then, you know, you're not just doing this for yourself.
Yeah.
You're doing it for your team as well. You know, if your team's contribution is unappreciated or underappreciated, then you as their leader aren't serving them as well as you could. You know, you really are doing them a disservice. So the other thing I've also reminded myself over the years is that I know my male colleagues would have been doing this all along.
That is such a good point. You know, I often say to people I'm mentoring and the like is, you know, well, what would Richard Branson be doing and saying? Or what would your male colleague be doing or saying? You know, and that's right. There is plenty of data that shows that males have an easier propensity to talk about the things they've achieved.
Totally.
You know, I've got a great memory about that. Actually, a mentor of mine was encouraging me to be more self sort of promoting internally. And she said, don't be fooled that just because it's your job to do X and Y that you don't need to report back on them. She said, it's a classic trap, particularly that women can fall into. And as she said, you know, your male colleagues are claiming credit for all kinds of things that you probably wouldn't even have thought of claiming credit for.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, how you share your achievements really matters.
Yes.
You know, it does. It's a good thing to think about when is the most appropriate time and forum to share your work and with whom. For example, you know, if you solved a complex problem that saved your organization time and money, then do the right people know about that? And make sure that you mention it and other achievements in your performance reviews as well. That's a really, obviously, the perfect place to be talking about your achievements. Make sure you write them down as you go, though, because it makes your performance reviews easier. And if you're worried about sounding too boastful, then focus on the impact of your work and the positive outcomes it generated. Being professional and sticking to the facts is also important to avoid being too, you know, avoid being actually too descriptive. And avoid using superlative adjectives, you know, such as amazing and brilliant, because that doesn't actually sound that authentic.
No, and also that's where the bragging can come in. Whereas if you just say, you know, the team and I or the team have nailed it on now getting much greater clarity on the fact that all of our data is clean, it's not duplicated, and we are learning some incredible insights. And here's an example.
Yeah.
You know, I said incredible. So we are learning some valuable insights.
Well done for picking yourself up there.
Yeah, that's right. It is really easy to sometimes let these kind of adverbs and adjectives slip in that could be sounding a little bit boastful.
Yeah, no, it really is. Actually, I've got, you know, one of my coachees was kind of thinking about how does she make sure she's in a regional job. And she needs stakeholders in the US to really understand what she's doing and the value that she's bringing. And so what she has done is actually she does a weekly newsletter that explains what the team has done. And again, it's sort of really short and sharp and very focused on language that the other people will care about. So I think that's a great example of how she's thought quite strategically about how she makes sure that she, not only that she gets the credit and the team gets the credit, but also I guess that's influencing too.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's really interesting. And that's right. The good thing about this is at the end of the day, you're sharing good news and there's never enough of that. Now, the final thing in terms of getting recognition for your work is to not just sort of communicate the success stories, but to also consciously build your internal network. And this helps you to then more naturally socialize what you're working on more broadly. Because if you build your network and make sure you do get to know people who are leading other parts of the organization and the like, then it just starts to help you spread the word about the fact that you can hit home runs.
Mm. And often those people are sitting in calibration sessions for promotions.
Well, exactly right.
So really important.
And I think this point about thinking consciously about broadening your social network so that you can include these people in at least occasional updates where you're sharing the exciting news of some great progress and achievements that have been made by you and your team. This also helps address a situation if you think there's a bit of credit theft going on because you are organically telling people what you're doing. And that is an invaluable strategy.
Yes. And so let's talk about that, shall we? Let's talk about credit theft.
Yes.
An example of that might be where your boss or someone else has said in a meeting, you know, well, I did that, or they have emailed somebody else or led somebody else to believe that they are the ones that have done something. So I think the most important thing here is to make sure that you are actually documenting your contributions. Again, you know, that newsletter I talked about, one of my coachees does, actually is a great way to have everything documented.
Yes.
And so it's quite clear where it's coming from. But, you know, even if you just have that for yourself so that you've got those notes so that you can remember the detail, etc., I think is a really, really good thing. It might also be that, you know, in your meeting notes, which record the ideas or actions you undertook, make sure that you've got them written down.
Yeah. And if someone shares, I think being timely in a scenario like that. So if someone else has shared the meeting notes of a meeting that's just taken place and you felt the notes and or the what happened in the actual meeting didn't reflect the reality, that email with the minutes is another opportunity if you didn't get a chance in the meeting to try and correct the record and say, actually, can we just adjust these minutes or action and action items to record this?
I think that's right. Yeah. Don't just sit on it and stew.
Yeah. Are there any more tactics that you can think of, you know, if you really feel that your manager's taking credit for your work in a bit more of an overt way, perhaps, you know, what would you recommend listeners do?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, isn't it? Because it's one of those difficult conversations. But I really think you have to address the situation directly. But most importantly, you have to do it privately.
Mm.
You know, do not resort to public accusations. That's not going to get you anywhere. It's just going to really reduce trust. Approach the individual privately and raise your concern directly. But make sure you actually ask curious questions and explore why your boss appeared to claim credit. Because it may be, one, that they didn't even realize they were doing it. Two, they might be doing it for a reason.
Perhaps, yes. I've heard of a case where in a specific scenario, someone did ask their manager, and the manager said that they'd claimed ownership of a project while it was underway to protect the team members on that project should it not succeed and should it not go well.
That's
interesting. You know, I'm not saying that's a good or a right thing to do, but interesting that that has happened, and it was a new scenario certainly for me to consider. And I guess, you know, then if that happens, you'd probably sort of be wanting to probe the manager a little bit more and sort of say, well, I'm really curious, why did you think doing that is necessary? Are there some hatchets out for us and the team or something?
Yeah, or, I suppose they might have had some bad experiences in the past.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it might might be genuine.
Yeah. But I think then you'd also want to ask them, well, what do they plan to do when the project is completed successfully, if it's completed successfully, you know, and if they then are still going to claim the credit.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Or are they going to come kind of sort of come clean with others in a sort of an appropriate way?
Yeah, I think that's right. It's all about having straightforward conversations. And I know that they are not always easy.
And I think that's right. And straightforward and not accusatory.
Yeah. Curious conversations.
It's such a good word, isn't it? For so many conversations.
It really is. It really is. You know, I think the other thing is that once you've had that conversation is then sort of moving it from not necessarily feeling hard done by about what has happened, but focus on the future. So, you know, what is going to happen going forward? Agree that with your boss so that at least you've got some guardrails, a playbook, whatever you want to call it, to know what to expect. And then if it happens again, well, then, you know, then that's a whole other story.
But it gives you good material to have another curious conversation.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Great points.
So to summarize, ensuring you get the recognition you deserve is all about being proactive and thoughtful with your communications. Except that if you're not used to doing this, it will feel a bit uncomfortable. But remember that there are plenty of people out there who aren't shy to celebrate their achievements publicly. Finally, keep it professional and factual. Avoid embellishments that can sound too self-serving.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd add also, if you need to have conversations with people, be curious and just keep it calm. And have them.
Definitely have them.
Yeah, because otherwise it'll just eat away at you inside and that doesn't help anybody, particularly you.
Exactly.
All right, well, let's shift gears now and address a situation that can be incredibly frustrating and demoralizing, and that's when you are being micromanaged. Now, it's important to remember in this scenario that micromanagement often stems from a lack of trust in particular. So then that begs the question, how do you build trust?
Yeah, well, a key way to do that is by doing what you say you'll do when you say you'll do it.
Yes.
In other words, being reliable. Being reliable, I think, is really important. I actually love the trust equation.
Yes, you do.
I think it's a really great way to explore what trust is. Trust isn't just like a simple concept. There's actually multiple bits to trust. And this trust equation is by a guy called Charles Green, and we'll put a link to it in our show notes. It's basically, the trust equation is reliability plus credibility plus, he calls it intimacy, but I like to call it relatability, divided by self-interest. So you build reliability, and I talked about, you know, doing the things that you say you do. Credibility, which is, you know, having the credibility to know what you...
Which means you've done your homework and you know your subject matter.
Yep. And then the last one is relatability. So actually building a relationship, you know, knowing each other,
showing you've got things in common.
That's right. Maybe showing a bit of vulnerability, etc. And then that's divided by self-interest. Self-interest, in other words, is that you're not just in it for yourself. If you are in it for yourself, then you have to work much harder at reliability, credibility, and relatability. So I think that's a really interesting way to think about trust and breaking it down.
And I suspect that there's probably more than a few very smart listeners out there kind of going, well, hang on a minute, you just told us to, you know, plug our work in a proactive fashion, which could be sort of interpreted by some as self-interest. Now, we will say, yes, it could be interpreted as self-interest, but everybody does it, particularly the male gender. And so I think it's actually the price of entry is that you do have to promote your work.
Well, I don't see it as self-interest. I see it as credibility.
Yeah, well, that's right.
But reliability in some ways.
I don't disagree. I'm just thinking that some people might be thinking that, given we just talked about it.
Yes, but, you know, I think you could be right. But I think self-interest is more around, I'm just doing this for my own self. So, for example, you know, I'm sharing the things that I've done just in order for me to brown nose to this one person. Whereas if you actually do it from a place of, you know, I'm actually sharing this on behalf of my team.
And because I'm so excited by the impact on the organization's goals.
Exactly. Then
it really changes it.
It does change it.
Yeah. No, exactly. But I just thought there will be some people I would probably, you know, be in that.
Good call.
Yeah. Anyway, I digressed and I apologize. We're back onto trust. We've just covered the trust equation. So, you know, look, trust is so important and foundational in terms of trying to avoid being micromanaged. But, you know, it's not about you. It's about the manager in this scenario. But let's say you feel you've done what you can to have built trust over time, but you still feel micromanaged. What can you do? Well, if you've been given a project or a specific task to do, then it's a good option to go back to your manager and share your plan of how you will complete the tasks. Perhaps there's some key milestones that you can identify and call out and then say, these three milestones is where I'd really like to come to you, manager, for your input. And then I can share the deliverables to up until that point. But also then you can share with the manager as part of your plan, you know, the timing of when you think each thing will be completed. You know, the idea here is to show your manager that you have a process and a plan and you've thought it through, to reassure them that you're not leaving out anything that might be important to them, or perhaps even to give them an opportunity to inject something in before you go away and start this plan. So try to agree with your manager upfront how often you'll have check-ins on the project. And this should imply they don't need to breathe down your shoulder every day with sort of micromanaging questions or inputs.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, if after all that, they still seem to be micromanaging you, then you could try a few more things. One, seek advice from a mentor or a trusted colleague.
Yeah, you always know, a good thing to do.
Always a good thing. They might have some pearls of wisdom for you. Maybe they know this person, etc. Secondly, spend some time trying to understand what's making your manager, or perhaps it's your stakeholder, feel that they need control, because that's really what it's all about. Like, micromanaging is somebody is feeling under threat and they need to have control.
Yes.
Right? So try and unpick what that might be, and then you can either have a conversation about it or you can go to them with the information that they might need. And thirdly, you could schedule a one-on-one where you explain to your manager that you actually would like more autonomy and how greater autonomy would benefit your work and your learning. And maybe you could suggest a trial period or a trial deliverable to experiment with this. So that would reduce the risk for your manager.
And I really like this notion of trial period or a specific trial, you know, end product come deliverable to play with, because, you know, it's a lot harder to say no to a trial than it is to sort of change habits. I think it's very, very hard to change habits sometimes. And it might be a habit that the manager has into.
Or they could be a new manager.
That's it. And just very insecure and feeling very stressed about
everything. And not used to like giving up control. They're used to doing it themselves.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Now, unfortunately, there are circumstances where you can't free yourself of being micromanaged. Albeit the story I'm about to share of my own, you know, I maybe didn't try as many things to really sit down with the manager I had at the time, you know, in hindsight.
Maybe,
But it felt so extreme at the time that I just thought, I don't think this person is going to change. And I did ask other colleagues as well. So I once worked for a founder who simply could not let go of the things that he'd hired me to do. And it got to the point where he was even overriding incredibly small things that really weren't worth his time, like overruling a courier.
What?
Yes. And I was, my title was the equivalent of MD, managing director.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And this was the founder and sort of, you know, he had a lot of capital that he had put into the business. So he was a founder, owner, and very close to every detail. And, you know, it was so destroying. And it actually had a physical effect on me as well. Yeah, I joined, and over this first 3 month period, I couldn't sit up straight. I realized that I was slouching because I just felt so smothered. And so I went for 3 months. I did talk to one colleague in particular who was more of a peer in a different kind of area, and sort of realized both from that conversation and from observation that this founder was not going to change. So I thought, well, give it the full 3 months. And then I resigned. You know, it had had such a physical effect on me, and it was very demoralizing. It was constantly asking myself, you know, why was I there? You know, as I say, perhaps I should have tried other strategies as well, like more direct one-on-one conversations with the founder.
Yeah.
But I didn't hold hope based on my other sort of conversations I'd had with others. So
it sounds so challenging.
Yeah, it was.
And soul destroying.
Yeah.
And sometimes life's just too short.
Well,
and
that's
you just
the thing.
Need to take a decision and go.
Yeah. And at least, you know, go early if you're going to go.
Yeah, that's it.
Go early.
Go
yeah,
early.
Fail fast, folks. Fail fast.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Well, that's this episode of That Story on Managing Up almost complete. We've covered how to influence up more effectively, how to ensure you get the recognition you and your team deserve, and what to try if you're being micromanaged.
And remember, effectively managing up, it's not about manipulation. It's about fostering a collaborative and productive, healthy working relationship. And do be proactive when it comes to effectively communicating your ideas and the value you and your team add. This will really stand you in good stead to build a stronger relationship with your manager and with the broader business, and help you achieve greater success over your career.
Absolutely. Well, that's this episode done and dusted. Stay tuned for our next episode with a truly pioneering and inspiring AI founder.
One with an incredible track record in AI as well. So you won't want to miss this one.
You definitely don't want to miss it.
In the meantime, stay positive, stay proactive, and have fun. Ciao for now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.